Daily flip. So the Olympics have been heaps of fun so far today. The Opals in a quarterfinal against the US shortly. There's been a lot happening in footy. Kane Corns, hello.
There has been, Jared, a bit breaking news sort of day and unexpected for a Wednesday, which can be a little bit more quiet. So let's start with Shay Bolton. Sam Edmund broke that story with us this morning that he has extended his contract at Richmond. Not sure how long it will be for, but in the coming days we'll find that out. But around that $600,000 figure, which struck me a little bit, and I thought, good on you. Like, that's for both club and player. That's a good offer, I think. He could have got money worth probably 800 at other clubs, which we've seen for some other players to move, but he stuck around at a place that has worked for him, and I think it's a good deal for both club and for player. And I guess the most concerning thing this morning, or this afternoon I should say, is the story relating to former Adelaide captain Taylor Walker, who has had an incident that he was involved in at a Sandful game on July the 17th, referred to the integrity department of the AFL in relation to an alleged racial slur directed towards a North Adelaide player at Prospect Oval. So no doubt that will be a big story as the club and the AFL try and get their heads around exactly what was said.
So Kane, I've asked Sam Edmund to come in and bring our 11-16 audience up to speed. So welcome to the flip, Sam.
Good to be on this side of the fence, Jared.
Just walk us through the details of what's known.
What is known is what is being reported in The Age, which Kane touched on, and that is Taylor Walker, veteran Crow forward, former Adelaide captain, embroiled in what the newspaper's calling a racism scandal. They're saying the AFL's integrity department is investigating an allegation, as Kane said, about a racial slur on July 17. It happened at quarter time of a game at Prospect Oval, and the match in question was between North Adelaide and Adelaide. And in that huddle, Taylor Walker is alleged to have made a comment about St Kilda and former St Kilda and current North Adelaide player Robbie Young to another Crows player. Those comments, alleged comments, were overheard by other players and at least one official, who then passed it on to the Crows, who referred it to the AFL and its integrity department. Now, I've spoken to the AFL on this. They are citing Rule 35 of the Vilification Code and the overhauling of that rule, which is now known as the Peak Rule, if you like, which prevents them from discussing any of these incidents in a public forum, other than to say they take all these matters extremely seriously and they obviously condemn any sorts of racial abuse. So The Age reporting that this investigation is ongoing and Andrew Dillon's team will be looking into it. Now, that Rule 35 was also overhauled and it extended the deadline for players to report racist or sexist abuse from 2 days to 2 weeks. And it also allows now, Jared, match day officials, umpires, office bearers, coaches and other players, not just the player who has been vilified, to report the abuse. And that is key because, as The Age points out, it was at the other huddle to Robbie Young. He has told people that he has heard nothing, obviously, given it was at a quarter time break. So all this to play out at the moment with the AFL Integrity Department interviewing the key players.
So I'm going to ask you questions you may not know the answer to, so just tell me that. So what was Tex doing there? So he wasn't playing?
No, he wasn't playing. Yep. He was there in a spectator capacity, if you like. It was the last game before the lockdown in South Australia, July 17. So he attended a Sandful game. Adelaide were playing. They were playing North Adelaide. And he wandered out to the quarter time huddle, seemingly, and that's when the alleged incident took place.
So what was said was heard in the Adelaide huddle.
Correct.
So the concern has come internally. It's been reported internally from the Crows through their channels and then passed on to the AFL.
That is how The Age is reporting it, correct.
So that's an unusual circumstance.
Yes, it is. As I said with Kane earlier today, normally in these situations, when it comes to racial vilification, it's player to player, official to official, player to official. In this instance, the player in question, Robbie Young, hasn't actually been directed the comments to. He's none the wiser. As you explained, it is exactly how it's been reported to have happened, that the comment was overheard and Tex Walker made those comments to an Adelaide player. It was overheard by other players and at least one official, and then it was referred to the Crows and then the AFL after that.
So, Kane, the Crows have acted really responsibly here on something that is, we've come to understand through the generations, just how the gravity that's associated with this is. What do the Crows... So the Crows have essentially reported it from their own... within their own setup and then taken it to the AFL. What do they do now? I'm really interested
in that. That's what I'm pondering, and it's as you know, as you understand, it's hard to give an opinion on something like this until we have the full facts. But I guess we need to ask the question: does he play this week? Would be the first port of call. Do they stand him down until the findings of this have been found? But you're right. As I read it in the Age, it was overheard by at least multiple players and officials who were clearly offended by the comments, have reported it to the club. The club's then done the right thing, as you say, and then reported it to the AFL. So, look, it may take a number of weeks to actually get to the bottom of it, but first port of call from the AFL will be to interview Taylor Walker, and I'd be surprised if that isn't happening today.
Yeah, it's a really interesting... So the AFL's role is prescribed. The Crows' place in it is really interesting. It is separate to whatever the AFL does, and whether it is conciliatory or whether there's a punitive measure to it is whether the Crows take action against Tex himself, which they would have the power to do internally. So that's a delicate scenario, but best in the hands of the AFL for now, and with the Crows to act thereafter.
Yep, and you know, I guess the work that the club has done in this space, with Eddie Betts and issues at the showdowns before, and both clubs ahead of the showdown this week have come together in the past to really make a stand on all things relating to this topic. So, you know, it's all alleged at the moment, but just how far this sets everything back is really alarming.
How significant is the Shea Bolton signature in your mind, Kane? They had to retain him, and I don't think there was much doubt they were going to. Your point is really well made. Is it is at a proper wage rather than an inflated wage. If Bolton becomes the player he threatens to be, he'll get that payday, and it'll come at a time where Richmond can actually afford it.
It's really responsible, isn't it? It's a really mature way. Now, you understand that the club want to try and save as much money as they can because that's what good teams do. They have a hierarchy with your salary cap, and that's what's been so successful at Geelong. And you don't jump the hierarchy. That's where Carlton have gone wrong. You don't have players like Zach Williams coming in and getting paid more than Patrick Cripps or Sam Walsh or Jacob Wheaton. You just don't do it, and it throws everything out. Chucks your culture out. It has people questioning the role in the team and all those types of things. So I'm a firm believer in that hierarchy of your salary cap, and I think it's more important than what people give it credit to. So Shea Bolton slots in exactly or around about exactly where he deserves to slot in the hierarchy at Richmond, and that is a 22-year-old player who's had, you know, some really good experience and has broken out this year, but hasn't done it for 4, 5, 6 years like the others have done. So you slot him in there and really responsible from him, and I think excellent guidance from Ralph Carr in this instance. He easily could have gone for $200,000 more per season, but you take tax out of that, it's $100,000. And what's it worth to stay at Richmond or go to a poorer club? So I just think the way that this has been handled has been excellent and a good example for other young players who get lured into other big deals.
And Sam, the Carter reports with the debate around the 19th licence in Tasmania is before the commission.
It is indeed. Colin Carter has provided that report to Gil McLaughlin and the AFL. Now, he does validate the Tasmanian Task Force submission initially. It's a really positive report if you're down in Tasmania and you have been barracking for a side, as so many have done for such a long period of time. Peter Gutwin, well, he wants the report released as soon as possible. Gillon McLaughlin given no indication that he will do that just yet. But the paper, or a paper, is being prepared for a President's end of season meeting to consider Colin Carter's review. And I think all the key players in this now believe it's not a matter of if that has been taken out by Colin Carter's report. It'll be the Presidents and the AFL Commission now that decide the when, whether it is 2024, 2025, just a time frame for a licence, the 19th licence in the AFL to take place at Tasmania. And then once they get an indication of that, Tasmania, they'll look to do some new deals with the likes of Hawthorn and North Melbourne to continue playing a portion of games in that state in the future seasons.
And the Tasmanian Premier Peter Gutwin is going to be on SEN on Friday when SEN launches in Tassie with Jack Riewoldt and Tim Payne. So we'll be able to listen to that and then bring you portions of it. But they've been pretty militant in what they've asked for. And that's in the process. Sam, thank you.
Thanks, Jared. Thanks, Kane.
Kane, you've had a great conversation with Lisa Alexander, I take it, around coaching pathways.
Yeah, it was thought-provoking. It had me thinking, Jared. She was sort of alluding to something that I don't think I'd said. And then I had to say to her, I said, Lisa, have I said something that's offended you in this? And she said, no, not that I know of, but I really want you to be a leader in getting behind the cause and supporting women and their, I guess, their desire to become AFL coaches, AFLW and AFL men's. It was honestly great. Anyone who's had that much knowledge and experience around sport and elite sport, she just reminded me so much of Mark William for the way that she thinks about the game. So, look, it's going to be a big issue, isn't it, Jared? And Nick Del Santo, I think, has been harshly done by just in this instance, because he's been the one that's been used as an example this week. But I genuinely think there has to be a better pathway and a better way of giving these aspirational coaches more opportunities and exposure. And that can start at VFLW level, that can start at SANFLW level, it can start at under 18 level. I don't know, there just has to be a better pathway. And like the AFL men's players get to experience and dip their toe in the water with coaching whilst they're playing, that's the other thing. So can the AFL Players Association come up with a program? So whilst the Ed Marinoffs of the world, if that's an area that they want to go into, or Chelsea Randall, they want to be coaches, can they start doing it when they're playing? I think that would be a great thing if you could develop a program for the players currently, and there's going to be so many come out and retire in coming years who are going to be looking to stay involved in the game. If they've done 4, 5, 6 years of experience whilst they're playing, then bang, they're ready to go. That will happen. It just feels like we're a little bit behind the eight ball in that space.
Yes, it is. There's been endemic lack of opportunity across the generations, and as this league opens up, so too does the next level in the coaching. So one of the midterm aims has to be the level 4 coaching course, which the AFL has set up as something of a finishing school, and this is a relatively new endeavour. This is only 6 or 8 years old. Is very shortly that should have equal streams of men and women. So it's a selected course. You have to interview for it and graduate into it. And there are, I'll get Craig Jennings to tell us on Friday, there might be 8 active men in it at the moment. There should be 8 women in it in the midterm. And they should always be equal numbers coming through the finishing course. And then you get the, it's not quite a qualification, but it is sort of the industry recognised best setup to become a coach. And then you're in the pool to be interviewed. And then it's up to boards and selection panels whether they take you or not. But that's a really practical step that the AFL should be looking to implement in the next couple of years. That doesn't have to be a generation in the waiting.
No, that's a great example and exactly what I'm saying as well. And also the practical experience to be able to do that as well and coach, like, nothing's really stopping that from happening. But I see Tom Lynch is coaching with the Crows AFLW team and has made an investment in himself to do that. The same opportunity should be able to happen for the AFLW players if they want to go to coach at the SANFL or VFL level, whatever it is. But just more experience is what's needed, and that level 4 one is absolutely spot on with what you say.
What an interesting
day. Hey, what's happening at the Olympics,
Jared? A 12 and a 13-year-old on the podium in the skateboard, so there's serious conversations at home for me tonight with a 17 and the 14-year-old, just pondering, what have you been doing across these years so far? There's still hope for the 8-year-old, but we've got a date with the Opals, Kane, so I'm going to have to leave you.
You're going to have to leave
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I've got to tell you to flip off, unfortunately. Oh, I never even got to clip you for your Jack Revolt stuff this morning,
Jessica,
but that can wait.
We can wait. I wanted Jessica Hull and I wanted Lyndon Hall and Peter. I wanted all that. I'll let you go, Jared. We'll continue this tomorrow.
Flip off, Kane. So that's the daily flip off as we bring you up to speed on footy and the Olympics. We're due with the Opals coming up.